Well, how appropriate it is that on this weekend, when there are so many demonstrations all around the country for the reunion of the separated children with their parents, that we have this gospel in which Jesus reunites this child with her father. And so we continue to pray that the terrible problem that confronts our nation may be resolved. Turning to today's scriptures, you may be a little puzzled. You think you've got it figured out, how they all fit together, and you can't fit these three scriptures today together. The second one, the letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians, has nothing to do with either the first or the second reading, or the third reading of the gospel, because it's about the collection. St. Paul was writing a series of letters to the Christians in Corinth to try to raise money for the Christians in Rome. And they're known as the letters of the collection. And they're just put here. I don't know if we're supposed to get the message too, but at any rate, they don't have anything to do with the other two readings of the day. So, when we think of things that are going on positively, we've seen the College World Series last week. We have Wimbledon Tennis Championships beginning tomorrow. And how many TV channels are there that are dedicated to sports? They draw a huge and a very faithful, continuous following. Those Wimbledon Tennis Championships will be covered more than 12 hours a day. Sports are popular because they are a kind of metaphor for our life experience. You win some, you lose some. Sometimes you feel like the champion of the world, and sometimes you just feel beaten up as you drag yourself off the field. And today's gospel is about someone who felt pretty beaten up. This religious Jew named Jairus has, we are told, a daughter at the point of death. And he begs Jesus, come and place your hands on her, and she will be made well. Any of you who have had a child who was gravely ill can certainly identify with Jairus. He was the leader of the local synagogue. He was likely a proud man, but here he was on his knees in the dust, begging this wandering preacher, Jesus, to come and heal his daughter. What great extent we will go to take care of our children. We don't know whether Jairus thought if Jesus was the Messiah, but he was so desperate he would try anything. This is a man who has nowhere else to turn. And that is a story that is repeated all around the world. The prognosis is grim. You better call the family. There's nothing else we can do. So we try to find a corner where we can be alone. We clench our hands in prayer. Jesus, please heal him or her. Please, Jesus, spare him or her this time. He or she is such a good person. Why do they have to suffer so much? Please, Jesus, our family needs him. You and I have probably approached Jesus on our knees sometime in our life, just like Jairus. We have reached out to touch him, and the power of Jesus to heal is shown in the gospel over and over again. His presence alone makes a difference. He doesn't have any magic formula. He doesn't administer any drugs. He doesn't have any therapy. He's just there. The servant arrived to tell Jairus that his daughter was dead. Don't bother the master anymore. There's no point in continuing your trip. But Jesus went anyway. Jesus defied what was obvious. And Jesus always defies what is obvious to you and me. She's only sleeping, he explained. And Jairus' family and friends laughed at him. Does he know what he's talking about? Jesus always knows what he's talking about. So he takes the little girl's father and mother and his three favorite disciples, and he goes into the room. And taking her by the hand, he says, "Get up, little girl." And up she jumps and walks around. And everyone was thunderstruck. Jesus has this power to heal. We know that. We've seen it in instances where the doctors say there is no hope. We can't do anything more. But they have been wrong. Wherever Christ is, there is hope. Jesus has the power to heal. And that can bring us great comfort, but it also raises some troubling questions. If Jesus can heal, why doesn't he heal everybody? Why doesn't he use that power every time we call upon him? And so why do bad things happen to good people in the first place? Why should good people be afflicted with coronaries, cancers, miscarriages, mastectomies? How often we have asked God, why? And to frame an answer, here are some of the realities that we need to face. The first is pretty obvious. Things just happen. Life goes on. That doesn't sound very spiritual, but you can put your money on it. Things happen. Now, we want a why to everything, an explanation. Why me? Why her? Why now? And very often there is no answer to that question. Things happen. Jesus says in Matthew's gospel that God causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the just and the unjust. In other words, God does not play favorites. No matter who we are, things happen. If we're in the wrong place at the wrong time, life can knock us down before we know what's happening. It happens. Think about it. It makes sense. If God were to wrap an invisible shield around all of us who believe in his Son, then of course everyone would believe. Not out of love, but out of self-interest. I'm going to become a Christian, people would say, so that God will take care of me and my family. Becoming a Christian would be about the same as signing up with your insurance company. Except, of course, we would have the perfect physician. But then we would also have no freedom. We could not disbelieve. We would be enslaved because of our fear of pain and death. And that is clearly not what God had in mind. Things happen. Think about Hurricane Harvey. Good friends of mine had to be rescued from their home by boat. Did they do something to deserve that? Clearly not. When it comes to a lot of the pain and suffering in life, we who believe in Jesus Christ are just as vulnerable to heartaches and to tragedies as anyone else on earth. So when we ask the question, why me, we could just as well ask the question, why not me? And that brings us to our second reality, and that is that faith has very little to do with what happens to us. I repeat, faith has very little to do with what happens to you. But it has everything to do with how you handle what happens to you. People of faith handle hard knocks differently from people who have no faith. We have resources that people without faith do not have. Faith is itself a resource. We know that believing in all kinds of things can make us well. And notice how often in the New Testament Jesus says, "Your faith has made you whole." There is power in belief itself. Scientific research shows that believers are happier and healthier than non-believers, believe it or not. Not because God plays favorites. Not because he blesses some people and withholds his blessing from others. But we were made for faith, not fear. It is our nature to believe, and there is healing power in belief. You know, doctors and researchers talk about the placebo effect, how some people respond to medicine not because the medicine has any value, but because the patients believe in the medicine. Sometimes the placebo is just a capsule full of sugar, but the patients don't know that. And in one study, some patients received placebos, and the results were dramatic. This was a study of a new treatment for stomach cancer. And one-third of the patients who received the sugar pills developed nausea. Another third developed vomiting. And another third lost their hair. And they were just taking sugar pills. It could not have hurt or helped anybody. But because the people in the study thought it would affect them, it did. Belief is powerful. What you believe can kill you or heal you. We have faith. We have prayer. We know that God is not going to physically heal everybody we pray for. But again, scientific studies confirm what many of us know from personal experience. People respond to prayer. There is healing in prayer. One study on the West Coast split those who were ill in two groups. One group knew that they were being prayed for, and another group did not know they were being prayed for. And the group who did not know they were being prayed for recovered faster than the other. Things happen, and faith has little to do with what happens to us, but it has everything to do with how we handle what happens to us. And there is a third thing that we must remember. At the end of the day, it is God who is in control. You and I, we have a question to answer about how we view life, how we see it. How much do we trust God? Can we trust him when a child lies at death's door? Can we trust him when we have a crisis in our own health? Anyone can trust God when everything's going their way. But what about those moments when it seems like the whole universe is lined up against us? Do you know the mind of God? I do not. I am a searcher just like you are searchers. But I know this. In my 82 years, I have learned something. I don't learn a whole lot from pleasure, fun, and comfort. But boy, do I learn volumes from pain and discomfort. I prefer pleasure. But I've noticed, as one man wrote, whereas the highs make me glow, the lows make me grow. I believe this is why God put us in a world of both pleasure and pain, good and evil, highs and lows. The highs keep us going, but the lows keep us growing emotionally, intellectually, and spiritually until that day comes when we are fit to live life eternally with God who loves us beyond all telling.